All right. G'day, guys. We are going to be talking about what's new in Visual Studio 2015 for this talk. And kind of what I've planned on doing is running through kind of all the cool features that are in there. I had quite a long discussion with a number of guys in our office. We've been using 2015 since the early betas. Everyone has a different opinion on what's cool in there. But I've included a lot of their suggestions and some of my own favourites, but it's obviously not going to cover everything. It's a bit of a beast. So what I wanted to do was I'll walk through a little bit of history first, then we'll talk about what's new in Visual Studio Online, because that's pretty important. I'll talk about what's cool in the updates we've been getting, what are the kind of the 9 big goodies in the Visual Studio 2015 .NET release, and then I want to talk about ASP.NET. And then we have a second session after this, and we're going to be going further into kind of what's there in the DevOps space. You know, there's a big set of movement in the DevOps space. So there's a lot of stuff there to improve the maturity of our teams. Alrighty, so I'll start with a trip down memory lane, but before I do that, I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Adam Kogan. I am the chief architect at a company called SSW. We are a certified gold partner, and I'm one of a couple of Microsoft regional directors in Australia, have been for maybe 12, 13, 14 years, and I am an ASP insider. My favorite title is I am an ALM MVP. That's probably going to be called a DevOps MVP soon, because that's all Microsoft talk about these days. I also am a Scrum Master and a soccer coach, and I have my kids' soccer teams. They're all doing Scrum, all right? They do retrospectives at halftime and everything. They talk about what they did well during that first half and what they need to improve for the second half. And I'm a very proud owner. Do you guys know what this thing is? Maserati. It's not. You're so old-fashioned. Okay, no, it's a Tesla, okay? Now, hopefully they'll come to New Zealand soon. I went to Norway. I just spoke at a conference there called NDC, and NDC will also be coming to Australia. It's a pretty cool techie conference, but what I did notice is they have Teslas everywhere. They're like, I don't know, like Holdens, I guess. They're everywhere. And the government give them a huge tax incentive. So, in Australia, we have to pay luxury car tax. I assume when they come here, you'll get the same deal, although your government's probably much better than our government. But, they charge, I had to get this past the wife, who, she's Greek, and she doesn't believe in paying luxury car tax. So that was a very tough sell. But it is an amazing car. I just put up on my blog a review of it, and I said a few things that they need to improve. Well, I got 150 nasty emails from Tesla fanboys. You do not say anything bad about a Tesla. Be very careful. All right. They call me an effing loser, and how I could possibly say any, why I could say that there's anything wrong with the Tesla. It's amazing. Read the YouTube comments. All right. So let's go back over history. Visual Studio 2002. I love looking at what we are still using, which is nothing. All right. 2003. The only things that we're still using then was this JetBrains ReSharper utility that came out, and we love that. Who uses ReSharper? All right, okay, almost all of us. Then 2005 came out, and what did we get? Generics, and we got ASP.NET 2. We care about generics. We care about this product TFS that got released then, because otherwise we'd still be using Visual Source Safe, right? No. All right. 2008 came out, and the cool stuff that we still use today is Link, and well, we got MVC. I remember when this came out, I didn't know if it would take off. But who's still doing web forms? Oh, there's one there. Yes. Hopefully, you're not doing web forms on new projects. That's what I would say, but obviously, Microsoft would tell you they're equal, but you know the real story. So we're doing web and load testing, which is becoming even more important, especially in the DevOps space, and we'll talk about that in a little bit of time. But we also have this third-party tool that came out, LinkPad. And What percentage of people are using LinkPad? Okay, you can see probably 60 or 70% of people. All right, so 2010 came out. Well, we got, some people care about F-sharp. Does anybody care about F-sharp in New Zealand? All right, we got six pair of hands. So we got about 2 or 3% of the room. We got QuickSearch, IntelliTrace, MVC 2 and 3 came out in this time space. And we got this test manager. This was kind of the first time we had testers and developers kind of working together as best we could. That was the first tool set that came out that really broke down that first wall between testers and developers. And also at this point in time, a lot of us started doing Scrum and we kind of had testing done during the sprint. How many people here are doing Scrum? All right, that's almost everybody. I'd say 80%. So 2012, well, we got the modern UI and black and white. That really pissed everyone off. We got faster add references, which you could call a bug fix. We got NuGet. That became very, very important. And the Team Explorer was stopped all those dialogues popping up left, right, and center. Is anyone still on 2012? Who's still on 2012? Quite a few. Okay, quite a few. All right. We got storyboarding with PowerPoint. We got IntelliTrace in production. We got MVC 3 and 4, Web API, pretty important. Meant we didn't have to feel stupid with WCF. We got CSS and HTML5 support, debugging in Chrome. Gee, imagine if we're still debugging in IE. we got exploratory testing in the testing space and the feedback tool, and a few third-party tools, Octopus, and this in-release product was out there, and that's something that Microsoft have purchased since then. Microsoft do, like when I'm an MVP, and when the MVPs whinge a lot to the product team about things we think Microsoft are doing that don't make sense, and we say, well, nobody uses this or they show us, they have this thing called SQIM data, and SQIM data shows you what they're actually really using. And it's quite interesting. It's many of the things that we think is not reality. But also, one of the things I found interesting is almost nobody is using storyboarding in PowerPoint, which is a shame because you know how you say a picture is worth a thousand words. In a lot of meetings, I can tell you that a mock-up is worth a thousand meetings, kind of. Like there's a lot of meetings that go back and forth, and you can tell that the customer and the developer aren't even in sync. Like I'm often a Scrum Master in a lot of different companies, and it's amazing. They just need to pull out Balsamiq or this storyboarding tool that's in there. Now, the story with the storyboarding tool, I think there is a little bit of news on that. I think it's been released in the community edition. Does anyone know that for a fact? I'm pretty sure that it used to be in one of the fancy SKUs where you have to be rich. Who's on Ultimate? Who's got Ultimate in this room? Gee, wow, half the room, yeah, rich Kiwis. It's amazing. No wonder the Aussies get annoyed at Kiwis, You tell the US what to, get stuffed, and you all have an enterprise. Anyway, this tool is now free. I think it's free. Don't quote me, don't tweet that, but I'm pretty sure it's in the community edition. Anyway, it's been brought back down. So it's a tool that you should just pull open and use during a meeting. In 2013, we got visualstudio.com. Microsoft moved to the cloud with their TFS product. They released a community version. We got Git support, which was great. We got TypeScript. Back then, it was TypeScript 0.8, and it was just a little extension. Now, in 2015, it is in the box. Who is using TypeScript in this room? All right. Not even 10% of the room. I'm going to tell you of the best tip that I can give you. Don't write any JavaScript without TypeScript. We haven't done that in our company for some years now. I would tell you that's the best takeaway I can give you. We wouldn't, as soon as your project gets substantial, you have to be using TypeScript. So only edit in TS files. And actually, I went to the Commonwealth Bank, and none of their stuff They've got a very large application, and they're not using TypeScript at all. And I said to them, haven't you considered TypeScript? Because, you know, obviously UIs get more and more fragile these days. And you know, they've got several hundred developers. And the thinking was that it's a huge move. It would be a huge move to move all those guys onto TypeScript. A lot, you know, basically they're getting by at the moment. But really, you don't have to boil the ocean to move onto TypeScript. You just have to put in your definition of done. If we create any new JavaScript files, they'll be TypeScript files. If you touch any existing JavaScript files, make them TypeScript, and you just do it piece by piece. That's my tip of the day, and you know, you can leave now. We got CodeLens. CodeLens is important. It's built on something called Roslyn. We'll talk about that in a sec. Code map and sync preferences. So lots of stuff, and we got some colors back. Wasn't that good? All right. So, wouldn't it be really nice if you could make changes and the browser just updates, especially when you're doing CSS stuff? Wouldn't that be nice? All right, you've already had this since the old days. You've got browser link. I'm mentioning this because this is another thing that Squim Data says very, very few people use. So when you, especially when you've got designers on your team or you're doing that last stuff, just get a couple of monitors. Maybe get your boss to get an extra monitor. You get a few monitors. You make changes and you just save and it just updates. It's a lot better. Essentially, it just works like this, and I'm just... this is old news, but it's just a shame that nobody seems to use it. You make a change, you save the file, and obviously these two things down here would be on two different monitors. Okay, so that's just browser link. It would be really nice if when you're in the browser and you're looking at stuff, it would highlight back in Visual Studio. So you just want to do that. It'd also be handy to find unused CSS and clean things up. Now this guy, anyone recognize him? I think he's Danish, Mads. He's not mad, but he made this little tool called Web Essentials. And Web Essentials is, if you don't know who he is, you should get to know him, because he's like the savior of the JavaScript developer. Okay, he's awesome. He's a workaholic, I think. But you install this little extension, and when you're hovering over here, you can see the code. You could even make changes and all go back into the Razor code. So it's pretty cool. In addition, you can come in here and press F12 and use your browser developer tools. And when you're making little changes here, like the background color, I don't know if you know this, but you can press F12 and have it go back into your source code, okay? Anyone think that's cool? Oh, lots. Okay, well, I talked to a couple of my developers about this, and they don't like it. In fact, he sent me this picture on IM when I asked him. He said, it's like working like this. He said, thanks for the tip, but I don't want to work that way. I want to see the changes in the browser, and then I'll go and make the changes myself, thank you. Anyway. So, if you don't like Web Essentials for that reason, there is this other one that I think is kind of cool. You go into unused CSS, and it will show you the unused CSS. So if you don't like the other part of it, I think this one's compelling, because you know, anything that cleans up technical debt is good. All right. I should ask, how many, you've got Chrome developer tools, you've got IE developer tools, you've got Firefox, they're pretty close to each other. Who is using Firefox for their developer tools? Oh, we got maybe 15%? Sorry?
You have a stack 3D view.
Oh, very good, hold on. He's trying to take my thunder, this guy. Who is using IE? Oh, how come the hands are so low? Put your hand up, I use IE. It's not that bad. All right. Who is using Chrome? All right. So we've got 90% using Chrome. What's your name, sir?
Peter.
Peter knows why I asked that question, because you've got these, they're all very similar, but Firefox has this view. And it's had it for a while, but now it's built in. And I just want to tell you about this cool 3D view. You click on this guy, you click on 3D view, and then you'll have this. And you can see how deep your UI layers go. I'm not sure if it's really that cool, but it looks cool, okay? We've had a couple of times it's been half useful. But, you know, if the boss is ever asking what you're doing and he's questioning your technical abilities, show him the site and this, and it's quite impressive. All right. So anyway, that's a trip down memory lane. Let's just talk about what's come out since we got 2013. We got a series of bug fixes in update one. In update two, we got a whole lot of Git improvements. We got testing improvements with the load testing in the cloud, which becomes very important in the DevOps space. We got TypeScript 1.0. TypeScript is at 1.5 at the moment. That's what you should be on. And on the TFS side, we got work item tagging and we got lots of nice charts for the testers. All right, so that's what we got then. And in 2013, update 3, we got CodeLens for Git. We got App Insights bundled in. We got Cordova tooling if you don't want to go down the Xamarin route. Talking to too many pommies. And we got more configuration on the work items in TFS. And there's lots more, but I'm just giving kind of the big ones. Update 4, we got CodeLens improvements. We got testing and filtering. And Release Manager was basically given to us based on their purchase of InRelease. And that's that. So it's in the product. So an update... We've just had this. This only came out, a week ago or so, update 5, and we got some bug fixes, and now we can finally rename a team project. That didn't take long, did it? No, slow clap. Okay. All right. But that's not very helpful. When someone does something very good for you, even though they take a long time, it was a very big engineering task, very big engineering bug fix. Okay. So let's go off Visual Studio for a moment and let's go into the cloud, okay? And in the cloud, we have Visual Studio Online. And there's lots of goodies in there, and I just want to call out a few because, I have a few favorites. Monaco, the new build, work item customizations, pull requests, and App Insights. So I'll just run through this. But I know that you can now go into the browser and do, it's essentially a code editor. It's called the Monaco editor. And it's almost as good as Visual Studio in the browser. You can use IntelliSense, you can highlight references, lots of cool stuff. It's a bit like this, okay? And now the reason I mention it is because I often see a lot of developers go back to Visual Studio just to make a couple of small changes, especially in a sprint review where it's very quick to make something, like the customer wants some small thing. You can just do it right there and then on a machine that might not have Visual Studio, or if you're deploying to your test environment and that doesn't have Visual Studio, you can make some config changes to see what the problem is, that type of stuff, just some experimenting. So let's just say you're in there and he really wants an exclamation mark there. You can come in here, you click browse websites, click Scrum, the team, come into here, some blades will pop open. You click on all settings. I know it's a little small, but you click all settings, extensions, that. I know there's a few clicks, but click browse. You can't, but that is a one-time clicking experience. Once you've done that once, you're good to go. So now we're in here. And you make some changes. So you'd open up views, you'd go to that file about, and you'd make your little changes over here, and then you'd press save, right? So, Peter, have you used this before? No, never used it. All right, so let's just say you've made those changes. You come in here, you click this button, then you put a nice comment. I want to press the save button. Where's the save button, Peter?
Control S,
no. What's your second option?
It's already saved.
Hit what?
It doesn't need save button.
It doesn't need save. No, it does need a save button. Yes. I couldn't find it. It must be something wrong with me. Yes, it's that guy. Anyway, I was looking everywhere. That's the new save button, okay, for young guys. All right. Anyway, If you can work that out, then you're good. You just refresh here. Now, the best thing about this is you can do, you could use Visual Studio iPads to edit things like this if you need to. So you could go on holidays. You know, iPads pretty much save the world, and you could do your Visual Studio editing wherever you need to do now. All right. So the next thing is the build system. The build system historically has had, well, I guess you set up the build system and it doesn't give you much grief once it's set up, but some people have had a problem with the XAML build editor. And it looks beautiful, but there's a couple of things, like the changes that you make, they're not under source control like other things. It's a, you know, essentially, there's more and more investment being put into scripts, like PowerShell scripts and things like that. Anyway, they've gone ahead and they've made a new build system. And the new build system in 2015, I think you will be very impressed. I would like to know how many people are on TFS for their build, or they're on, say, TeamCity. How many people are on TFS? Oh, okay. So almost 80%. How many people are on TeamCity? Okay, maybe 30%. Doesn't really add up, but maybe you have two. Any others? What? Jenkins. How many people are on Jenkins? Okay, a few. Any others? Bamboo. Oh, Atlassian. Oh my God, we got the enemy in here. All right. No, all right. Yes, Mamboo would be a better name than Bamboo, wouldn't it? All right. So anyway, the important thing about the new TFS build, which I think you'll like, is basically there's lots of scripts, and it feels like TeamCity a lot, you know. It's amazing how Microsoft have come up with some of these ideas, but you've got all these nice investments in PowerShell and just runs the PowerShell. There's heaps and heaps of tasks out of the box that support everything from click once to everything. They're really nice. So I think they've gone the right way to do this. I haven't heard, and we've actually, you don't really need to convert your existing builds because they work, but I guess we like to do that anyway. And we haven't had any problems. So it's been a really nice experience so far, even though it's questionable whether you should bother migrating builds that are just working, you don't have to touch. Okay, but we migrate them in case we have to touch them one day. All right, so Scrum and Kanban, there's heaps and heaps of support for that. How many people are doing Kanban stuff? A few, more than I thought. Okay, maybe 20% of you. All right, anyway, so you can do Kanban inside a sprint and continue doing Scrum. But there's lots of customization, colors, you know, it's working a lot better now. There's also, when you're in here putting comments in your code, and especially like pull requests, you can tag bugs or test cases or work items, PBIs, that type of stuff. So that's there's a number of nice little improvements there. Okay. So to avoid bugs, we've been doing these things like manual code reviews and trying to add more and more tests. We've all got continuous integration, I hope, and continuous builds. But the best thing that you can probably do to avoid bugs is, if you're using Git, is start using all the code review abilities. Forcing in your sprint or your PBIs to have a second pass of another developer is probably the best way of avoiding bugs. Anyway, I'll just run. And I actually find this really interesting. The guy that, one of the main guys that matters in the TFS space, his name's Brian Harry. Anybody follow his blog, Brian Harry's blog? Whoa, four hands, not very good. I would suggest to you to go to Brian Harry's blog, and on the right-hand side, just subscribe to his blogs. He only does one every now and then. But since he's like the father of TFS, Brian Harry blog. Subscribe to his blog. Get them in your inbox. They're about once a month, I guess. Oh, wow. They've really hijacked my browser. You just have to type Brian Harry blog twice and then click this. And then you'll be in. Yes. Now, Azure will pop up and want to charge me for this. No, no. Gee, the internet in New Zealand is kind of slow. And what has he done? He's done a new post just 7 hours ago. And what is news here? But yeah, he's basically saying how he's always talking about what's going on in this space. And in this case, I should just bump that up a little so you can. Yeah, he's just talking about the changing philosophy. You know, Build Minutes. He's talking about Build Minutes and the new marketplace that he's doing for Visual Studio and TFS. And but here's some good news for you. Now, you know how to sign up for builds. It was kind of it was a frightening experience in case your builds went crazy and you got hijacked for a massive amount of money. Now you can have unlimited builds for $40. Per agent, or you can use your own private agents using your own Azure infrastructure for $15. Of course, this is not to do with builds on premise, but you know that just gives you a little bit of an idea. Anyway, I kind of mentioned Brian Harry because I was always surprised. Brian Harry is the guy who actually invented Visual SourceSafe, which is probably not a claim to fame for some of you. He also invented TFS, and TFS. Was basically started by just a source code control system. And essentially, I was really surprised when Microsoft started investing heavily in Git. And I think I spent a bit of time with him on his farm. And I remember asking him when he moved, you know, one of the biggest divisions, DevDiv, onto TFS. Because that was back in 2005, I think. It's one of the big first times we really knew that TFS was really serious. If you can move DevDiv inside Microsoft onto TFS, that's a serious platform. Obviously, that was before the cloud. Now we know it's been well and truly tested. And I remember asking him, are you going to move Windows on? Why not? You know, move that from Source Depot. Haven't you kind of tested it? He said, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, why not? He goes, because you MVPs never stop whinging about not getting features. And when we do big things like that, they take up a lot of engineering time. And we kind of hit bugs that only the biggest systems ever hit, and it never kind of affects the rest of you. So that's why you didn't get many features in TFS 2008, for example. Anyway, I remember like a couple of years ago, he said, oh, I have a bit of a dream. I have a dream that everybody inside Microsoft starts sharing source code between each other. Because, you know, like that PowerPoint, what was that PowerPoint storyboarding tool? For that feature to be done, Microsoft or the TFS team have to successfully talk to the Office team and get some fixes done for that whole scenario to be supported. And that's a very painful experience if you understand how Microsoft works internally. And a lot of features that come in here come because Microsoft want them internally because they, you know, use them internally. SharePoint's a good example. That became very popular because it was so incredibly popular inside Microsoft first. Anyway, so now you see Microsoft investing heavily in Git, and I assume one day that there'll be, you know, lots of stuff inside Microsoft on Git, and they'll all be sharing. So I think this is how it came about. This is my theory anyway. So he saw all these cows and paddocks, and then he realized, oh, it'd be much better, you know, if we took them out of the paddocks. And then he, so then you have this guy. So you click new pull request, you choose this, you put some comments in, you press create pull request. You can then, I can view what he's changed and make a comment, maybe accept it, see the pull request by the other comments, and then come through and choose whether I want to accept it and reject it. And this is kind of the nicest way of getting a second pair of eyes looking at everything. So, and then you choose probably to merge it and you take it in. All right. So Application Insights is my last favorite thing in Visual Studio Online. I think that you probably wouldn't release a website if you're building a normal public website without putting Google Analytics in, right? So, right? You would always use Google Analytics on a public site because you want to see how things are going. So similar to this, I wouldn't probably release an application anymore without putting application insights in. How many people are already on application insights? Not even 3 or 4% of the room, which is a shame. Anybody on New Relic? Less than that. Okay. All right. So this is probably the biggest area that I've seen so far that you guys could improve, putting application insights into your product. It adds reporting all over your app. Now, it gives you telemetry. Remember I mentioned SQIM data? That's the old way. This is kind of the newer way. You can use this data in your ALM lifecycle to improve your maturity because, you know, when you're in a meeting and you're saying, all right, what are we going to do? They want to clean up the reports menu. It's got lots of old reports on that menu. I don't think we use that one, and I don't think we use that one. Let's kill those two. Does anyone know whether anyone's used it? No, no one's used it. Let's remove it. And then you think a bit more and go, last time we did this, Mary used that report every 3 months and we got in a lot of trouble. Let's just leave it. Nothing good can come of removing it. And that's how you have technical debt, because you don't have data. You should be in that meeting. Is anyone using these reports? Look it up straight away and see whether they're being used. Alrighty, so we've got a couple of rules here on how we use it in our process. You can have a look at those. But what's involved in putting it in? Open up Visual Studio, go to your project, right click, add application insights telemetry to your project. Click that, click this, and I took some screenshots of the first time we did this. We have this little time sheeting application in our company. In fact, I am such a great boss. All the guys have to do is enter their timesheets every day, and on Monday morning, they get free lunch. Isn't that awesome? So, and they still manage not to do it many occasions. Anyway, so I had a look here. I see availability is 100%, what I expect. I see performance is fine. And then I see what's going on with this reliability. I'm surprised. So I click on this guy. I go in and I go, oh, wow, there's a whole lot of unhandled exceptions, which I didn't even know about. Okay, so that's this is just a fairly a site that's used every day. It's not heavily used, but that was my first experience. So then the question would be, when should you deploy those changes? When do you guys deploy changes? What's the best time to deploy changes? Peter, when do you deploy? All the time.
You have a dev site and a slightly older stable site.
So all the time? What time?
Every build.
Every build. You deploy to production. He deploys to dev, to his own machine all the time. He's bold. Who's got a favorite time to deploy? 2 a.m. Wow, you are dedicated. You take calls at 2 a.m. You are hardcore. Kiwis, you never stop to amaze me. All right. Anyone got another favorite time? 6 a.m. So you get up early, deploy if there's a problem. Right. Okay, good. But you do have to take care of those things. But you kind of, the answer is it depends on which application, because everything's used a bit differently. Okay, now, if you're only dealing with Kiwi time, maybe that 6 a.m. is perfect. But if 6 a.m. is affecting a group of users in Europe, that's a problem. But obviously, these things tell you, you click on usage and you see when it is. And I remember looking at this for the first time, and this is my screenshot back then. I go, well, it's not used on Saturday, that's what I expect. That's weird, people are using it on Sunday, what for? Why is this spike on Monday morning anyway? I found out the spike, they were basically a good chunk of the guys were entering their timesheets at 8:45 because they worked out it was an automatic query I was running at 9 o'clock, which emailed me. So they were all lying to me, little buggers. But anyway, I found that. So you can come in here. That is the old portal, by the way. The new portal looks like this. It's like cool with blades and lots of clicking. So you click on this, you click on this, and then you come in here. And so it looks more trendy, I guess. But I just wanted to let you know that UI has changed. So anyway, all right. So these are Kiwis? No, I need some sheep, don't I? I need some sheep.
That's a
no. All right, but I've been asked not to make any sheep jokes. because I got in trouble a couple of years for my sheep jokes. I thought they were quite funny, but obviously not. The biggest user gripe got solved. Do you know what it is? Peter, you're not allowed to answer. What's the biggest user gripe? No idea. Does anyone know? The what? The taskbar icons. What's wrong with the Oh, yes. That's a new one. Gee, yes, you're on the money. A fix is coming. And they're not going to fix it the way you would think. Anyway, I find this amazing because you only get 10 votes on user voice. We all get 10 votes. Now, I've lobbied to Brian that the MVP should get a lot more because we speak to a lot of people and we want to put our complaints in. And I think it's crazy that we're limited to 10 things that we can complain about. Maybe there's too many things to complain about. But I find it amazing when I found out 3,000 votes were wasted on this file edit, file uppercase thing. And that was... Then I found out there's another one that sounded exactly the same for 2,000 more votes. Anyway, all you need to know is that is now gone and it looks like that. All right. And it's kind of amazing that... you know that Microsoft, the Visual Studio team is the last team to implement the uppercase type thing, was the last team. You know, been through Office, it'd been through the CRM team, and they whinged for a little bit and then they got over it. But the developers never got over it. Anyway, all right, so let's go through the best. I'm picking the 9 goodies in Visual Studio 2015 that I like. Now, I don't know if you'll agree with this, because inside my office, they didn't agree either, but I'm saying Roslyn is number one, and I'll talk about it in a sec, but Roslyn underpins everything, even though you might not even notice or care, it is the biggest thing that they've done. In fact, I'll just mention with Roslyn, they were going to ship that, I think, in 2010, and then it wasn't ready. It's the whole compiler as a service. It's underpins that whole thing. They didn't ship. They then said they'll ship in 2012. They almost did, and then they decided not to. They put some more features in. Then they were going to ship in 2013. They didn't, and they told they had to ship in 2015. So we got it. And the good thing is it's been used for a long time, and it's rock solid. That's probably why you won't notice it. New language features, more refactoring, code lens, smart unit test, blend, Windows 10 shared projects in IntelliTrace. I'll just walk through these are some of the highlights. Okay. And I'll just talk about Roslyn. It's the compiler. It's it exposes everything. And it solves a lot of pain for us in our company because we have a series of internal extensions and a couple of public ones. It is very fast. Now, if you think about things like CodeLens, CodeLens is built on top of Roslyn. So you know when you're hovering over methods and you see metrics about that inside Visual Studio, that's how that's done. We have this tool, Code Auditor, which we've had for some years, and it gives us a hell of a lot of grief because it's a Visual Studio extension that runs through your code and tells you what's wrong with your code, just a lint checker type thing. Well, all the rules were written in regexes, and I don't know if you know much about debugging long regexes, but we have a company of 45 guys, and there's only a few that are strong at regexes, and it's a very painful experience. And what we, this is the new UI that has all this stuff, but what I wanted to call out to you was the actual rules themselves, that was the UI, but the rules themselves are like this, and this is a regex, and you have to start editing this. We have some rules on commenting regexes to try to help this problem, but it doesn't really help. And even buying them lots of coffees, they still get headaches from these regexes. So now all our rules, I think all of them, almost all of them probably, have been converted to Roslyn. And obviously that's a lot easier to work with. I've got some videos here, I'm not going to play them, but on how we do that. I will just call out to you, because this isn't for everyone, but if you do, there are going to be cases where potentially you want to have dynamic business rules in your application where maybe the power users could add business rules, customizations, especially if you're building a service. But to work with those that Roslyn syntax, you've got this Roslyn syntax visualizer. So you click on that, and then when you select a line, like let's go the most basic one, using space system semicolon, and you've got it will parse that out and give you this syntax tree. Using, see, there's a white space of a space, and there's the identifier name and the semicolon. Those four identify that first line. Now, obviously, things get a bit more complicated than that, and they have this DGML. And this is kind of how one of our guys that record those videos, how he talks about how you use this. And that's how he converted all the rules. So it's quite cool, and I think over time you'll care about this. If you think about ReSharper could really benefit from this. Well, could have, had they built this a while ago. So under the covers of ReSharper, they've gone ahead and built their whole Roslyn engine style thing. And in fact, I think they have made a decision they're not going to use Roslyn because it's too big an investment to then move to here. But what you will find is you'll find a lot of people, like independent guys, like you guys could just go ahead and build some of your favorite ReSharper stuff pretty cheaply and pretty quickly. So great things about Roslyn, it's out of the box parser, allows code fixes, accurate, and it's used throughout Visual Studio 2015. Things like reporting services potentially could use it. Things like Power BI could potentially use it if you were able to put in a little bit of that syntax. So a few suggestions for the Roslyn team. Support C# scripting for small and portable code. Support things like JavaScript and HTML. That'd be nice. Improve the documentation because there's none, and add a user voice site. This guy that I just spoke to you about, Daniel, he did a really nice interview with this guy called Anders Heilsberg, which I hope you know who he is. You can have it's about 20 minutes, quite interesting. All right, the other thing I found interesting is this is where you can always get the latest version of Roslyn. If you want the daily builds, where do they put their daily builds? Up here? No, they put them on MyGet. I just think that's kind of interesting because it's interesting for us because we could copy that in the right situation where we don't pollute our NuGet packages by releasing too often, and we use MyGet for the interim ones, and maybe once a month you put a new NuGet package up. Anyway, so that's just a little tip not to pollute your NuGet feed. All right, let's talk about some new language operators. There's lots of them. I'm just going to highlight a couple. We got this guy. So in the old days, we would go, if not null, then dispose. You can now write it a?dispose. So they call this the Elvis operator. Okay? Because apparently it looks like Elvis. I don't see the similarity between Elvis Presley and anyway. So we would have code like this where we're checking if it's not null and then invoking, or we could write it less. You know, it takes away that common thing. Not everyone is in love with it. How many people here will use that new syntax? Oh, almost everyone. Who doesn't like it? I'll keep doing the old way. One, two guys. Three. All right. So I got asked a question about this, and I will just mention it to you. What's wrong with this code? Can anyone tell? Yes. So there is potentially going to be a threading issue here because this could be changed. Now, the reason I bring this up is when I showed this at CommBank, they said, I don't know if I'd use that. Is that thread safe? And I wasn't sure myself. So essentially, long story short, is I've looked it up. It is thread safe. So essentially, your old code isn't even good. Oh, no, my goodness. Bevan. Oh, yes. You're a nightmare. Yes, but I'm not talking about that bug. Okay. And I don't want a code review from you. All right. So I didn't realize the guys from Wellington are allowed to come up. Is that, no? You know, my kids love coming to New Zealand because they get to say, fuck a papa and fuck a tanny, and they know that they can't get in trouble. And they apparently, they found a whole lot of places in New Zealand. I didn't even know. I thought there was only the two, but there's quite a few others, and kids are quite good at finding them. And they don't like going to the South Island, even though there's a chocolate factory at Dunedin, because there's not as many of those places to go to. Anyway, so, but you're not on the South Island, are you? Oh, are you? Oh, but you're in Wellington, right? Yes. Oh, right. Okay. I thought they kind of kept them separate. No. Okay. All right. So, anyway, long story short, that is thread safe. So you would have to do that the old way, or you could just use our new Elvis operator. So there's even a more compelling reason to use it. Okay. So a couple of other things. You've got auto property initializers, declaration expressions, and I'll just quickly show you this. Do you like the fact that you don't have to declare a constructor anymore just to get a default? So you can do it like this. Is that nicer or not as nice? Who likes that and will start using that? Wow, that's 70% of the room. Who doesn't like it and will keep doing it the old way? Two. And the rest won't put up their hands anymore. Okay. All right. So you've got these other things where you've got declaration expressions where you can do it in line. I don't know. Who likes that? A few, not many. So you can see 20%. Who doesn't like it? It's not clear enough. 20. And the rest couldn't care less about these issues. Well, the reason that this was in the betas up until RTM, and then they ditched it from RTM. And they didn't ditch it for any other reason, is that their stats that they were getting was people weren't in love with this. There was a small percentage going to use it. It's testing resources. It comes down to testing resources. So essentially they put testing resources on the ones that people cared about. There's some string concatenation and other ones they cared about. So I expect this will come because it's been done. It just needs more testing. Expect this to come in an update or in the next version of C# or whatever. But we've got primary constructors. You've got this one. You can now do it like this. So we kind of, I don't know, it's different. I'm not sure it's as clear. Who would use this? 20%? What about you, Bevan? No. Who wouldn't use this? All right, so we got, you know, half the room wouldn't use it. Anyway, you don't have to worry because they're not giving it. Okay. All right, anyway, there's a whole series of those. They've got a website and they've put it up there. You can see which ones are coming, which ones aren't, and stuff like that. So it's quite cool. This is my favorite. So I just think that's a lot easier to read, you know, this guy. So that's in the box. So anyway, the marketing story is you can do the same thing with 50% less code now, which will make developers 50% more efficient, and you can ship in 50% faster. All right. Anyway, there's a massive list of changes that you can do in C#. All right. So one of the best things we got was Link in 2008. And I mention this because only recently, like Java developers, I don't live in the Java space, but I know they're cooler, and I thought that they've always told me that they're light years ahead of .NET. And I only found out recently they only just got Link. So I don't know how they're light years ahead of us. But one of the things that we've had to deal with a lot is this expression cannot contain lambda expressions. This is an annoying message, isn't it? You know, I think a lot of developers are cranky because of this message. Anyway, in 2015, that has been sorted, okay? Is that a... Oh. I didn't do it. All right. So if you wanted to use any of that new stuff in 2015 and 2013, you can do it. You just have to go to your proj file, and you have to add this line in, Lang version experimental. And you know, it's all up on GitHub, so it's open source, and you can grab it. Now, if anything was to go very bad, and there was a root cause analysis done in your company, and then they found out you put a line that said experimental, they might not be happy. But anyway, you can change the language that you're targeting in here. So you can choose build, advanced, come in here and choose the language that you're targeting. Now, one of the things that you will also see in 2015 is these little light bulbs. Like, Microsoft have come up with this great idea of putting light bulbs around the joint. And when you click on the light bulbs, you will be able to get code refactoring. Okay? It's another wonderful Microsoft innovation. All right. Actually, all jokes aside, I don't know if the ReSharper guys are upset about this innovative step, but you are now potentially going to have multiple light bulbs popping up from different products. You're going to have light bulb hell. It's going to be worse than DLL hell. And one of the things that's really, really annoying is when you click on any of these type of extensions, you can't tell which one it's coming from. You can't tell which extension it's coming from. I find that I hope one day you'll be able to click on one of these things and find out which guy it is, which extension. Anyway, the nice thing about it is Microsoft don't do any of that, I don't know what you'd call it, but you know in the old days when you'd open up a Windows form and you'd drag some component on and references would be added, secret code would be added, all these things. I hated that. Now, you see what it's about to do before you click it. Okay, so, you know. All right, is it ReSharper or Visual Studio? I don't know. But you click on this guy, you click on this, you see this, and it's quite nice. So you get a preview. And there's heaps of them. They're all through the application. Essentially, there's an argument that, well, I don't know if it's a very strong argument, but you don't need ReSharper anymore. I don't think many serious developers would think that, but it's getting there. They're doing some of the biggest ones. And they're always asking you which are the most important things you need. So they're always improving. I couldn't work this one out. Eric in our office thought this was a really important change. Well, one of his favorites. And I had to keep looking. What are you talking? What is different? I am blind. So I had to go and speak to him. What are you talking about? Can you see it?
Yep.
All right. So it's got a little icon and it's got blue. And so then he sent me a whole series more screenshots when I didn't understand and I still couldn't see it. But anyway, you can... Apparently that's really nice. Anyone like that? It's just Eric, is it? Oh, no. It's good chunky. All right. Okay. So is it Code Rush or ReSharper? Any Code Rush guys? Gosh. Like five of you, five Kiwis. All right. Now, I should tell you, there's a few ReSharper killers coming out already, okay? And obviously, these are based on Roslyn. I'm not going to vouch for whether they're as good, but I've had some good reports from a couple of devs in our company who seem to think they're cool. Okay. Anyway, CodeLens is another cool thing, all based on Roslyn. Now, CodeLens now works with TFS VC and Git, all right? So, it works with all Git. The other thing worth mentioning is we're always trying to increase our unit test coverage, right? How many people would have unit test coverage over 20%? Wow, more. How many people would have unit test coverage over 50%. Come on. Half the room is almost over 50%. Really? I want to see. Bring up your code. Show me. Okay. Well, obviously, you're doing a much better job than Aussies I speak to. But one of the things, you can't obviously measure code based on the unit test coverage because we don't know whether they're good assertions. If your boss is... I was actually in India training some GE guys, and I said, do you guys do unit tests? And there was four teams there, and one of them said, oh, yes, we do 91.5%. I said, oh, wow, you happen to know that number off the top of your head? Yes. I said, oh, and what about your team? Oh, we're 89.6. I said, you really know these numbers off the top of your head? Yes. I said, how do you know? Why do you know these numbers? Because we have to send to head office every single Friday what our numbers are. So obviously, got the idea that some manager in America thinks that's a very good metric to be measuring. But you don't know how good their assertions are, whether they're just testing the happy path or they're doing edge cases. But anyway, there is this new thing in there called smart unit tests. And smart unit tests, they'll increase your code coverage. And essentially, it comes from the Microsoft Research Group. So if you look at some code like this, Bevan, you're not included, okay? But if you look at some code like this, can you see anything wrong with it? No default? And the director's salary is a bit high? Okay. So what you do, if as you're testing code that you might be in this area, somebody else has written it, you click on this, you come in here, smart unit tests, and it would tell you, oh, there's a problem here. There's a null reference exception. So then you go through, you'd have a look at that. You could actually right-click on all those and save them as unit tests. That would increase your code coverage quickly, wouldn't it? And you come in here, you put a null check, you run it again, and everything's green. All right, so that's kind of... all the MVPs have been complaining about that it's got the wrong name. They don't like it being called smart unit tests. They asked Microsoft to call it dumb unit tests. And Microsoft didn't do that. But they have renamed it to be called IntelliTests. Okay? So you can thank the MVPs for that weird name. All right. So I'll just talk about Blend and those stories. I know that this wasn't a popular one. I mean, we haven't really used Blend much recently. Our designers, if you use Blend, you'd be doing Windows Phone development or Windows Store development, or you could do a universal app and hit both those, but that's not hitting a very big target market, is it? The story with Windows 10 gets a lot more exciting. How many people have already installed Windows 10 and using it? Wow, that is awesome. All right, I'll say that's 70% of the room. That's pretty good. Now, you can see Windows 10 is, it's no Vista, is it? So when you now create you target one of these modern apps, or you are potentially targeting a Windows app, a store app, an Xbox app, a HoloLens app, a service hub, the new TV, and a Raspberry Pi, IoT. If you put what was that, 6? If you throw in Xamarin, you're targeting iOS and Android. That now is a pretty compelling story. Even without those two big guys, just targeting 6 platforms with one code base, that makes this whole story a lot more exciting, doesn't it? Yeah. So I am really interested to see how this pans out. I really think it's good. Yeah, it feels good. Anyway, we'll see. I think Windows 10 will be huge. I wrote this before I knew that 70% of New Zealand has already migrated. It's a free upgrade. It runs on everything. It's targeting solutions everywhere. It's got Cortana. She's sexy. And we got the Edge. Anyone like Edge? Who likes Edge? No, not many. Yes. Yes. I didn't like Edge either because you can't right-click on a word and then, what is it? Search in Google. Yes. All righty. Okay, so I'll just run through quickly. You'll have a story whether you want to use shared projects or PCLs. I would just tell you very quickly that you don't want to probably go down the shared projects route. Portable class libraries are the way to go. It's just a lot simpler to use. You would have to have a compelling reason to use shared projects. I've just seen a number of teams have this discussion. Just go with portable class libraries unless you need specific hardware features. All right. I love this feature. How do you find slow code? So there's a number of tools out there. Ants Profiler is one from Britain, which is pretty good. I've always loved IntelliTrace in Visual Studio. Not a high percentage of our clients use IntelliTrace, but that team has got a number of new guys on the team. And one of the things I really love is this thing. So as you're stepping through the code, it tells you the amount of time since the last breakpoint. And so as you're stepping through, you go, hello, that call to this folder is very expensive. I think that's nice, because now we're not thinking of performance after we've done it and we're trying to improve performance. As we're stepping through code, we're seeing this. So then you can click on this link, and when you click on the link, you will see, well, this is kind of piggybacking on IntelliTrace. And, you know, obviously lots of people talk about IntelliTrace and how to turn it off because it's slow. And so the tip on the internet is basically you click this button and you fix IntelliTrace. Now, the story with 2015 is IntelliTrace is now no slower. So there's no good reason to turn it off like in the old days. Plus, you want the stats. You want those stats I just showed you. In fact, the stats get even better. When you come in here and you're looking at the time elapsed, you can then look at this diagram over here, and we know it's slow. Like in this case, it looks like it's taking 4 seconds. We can see, well, it's not a CPU issue. That's pretty clear, it's not a CPU issue. There is something going wrong here with memory, and we've got some exceptions happening here in red, so we can click on this. And this little black guy, when you can expand and drill through to a specific area, and you've got all these exceptions that you can see. You can click on these little black things and then see your output statements, or without having to go to the output window. So I think this is really nice. Who likes this feature? All right, so almost everyone. So that might be, a great killer feature we all start using. All right. So remember all this? This was WSDL files. That's a beautiful memory. The story with WCF and Web API, well, everyone's going Web API here, right? Who's on WCF? A few. Who's on Web API? Almost everyone. Okay. So the cool, everybody's got a rock solid Web API, a REST API now. How do we document a REST API? Everyone's kind of documenting a little bit differently. You can go to Xero, they document it this way, and Twitter document it this way, and the new way of doing it is Swagger, okay? And is anyone using Swagger already? Okay, a few. All right, so we've got a few. But it reminds me of Mick Jagger. So Swagger is basically a standard way for people to start looking at your REST APIs. I mention this because there's a popular one for your web API, but don't use that, use Swagger. Now, to use Swagger in Visual Studio, you need an extension. And I was hoping it would have been called NSwagger or something like that. But in fact, it's not. So this is kind of what it looks like. It's called, does anyone know the name? Swashbuckle, yes. So I thought it might be one of these, but no, it's Swashbuckle. So that's the NuGet package you need. Go into NuGet, get your Swashbuckle extension, and that will automatically give you that. All right, how are we going for time? 2 minutes. Where's my coffees? Can't rely on my coffees. All right. So I want to quickly tell you about one more thing before I finish up. Power BI. It's a very quick thing. It's not part of this, but I just want to mention to you because you need to start getting your stats into here. It's very new. If there's any Power BI sessions here, I really encourage you to go along. But you get this intelligent Q&A. There's Power BI for your visualstudio.com projects, and we're using it extensively to as an interface into that. It's got beautiful integration where you can see what's going on. It gives you a complete new window into your stats that the developers are putting in. And so you get the reports and a dashboard, and it's really, really nice. So you can quickly see all the change sets, what's going on. It gives you a very high level thing, and you'll start using that for your customers as well. That's what we've done. Alrighty, so finding bad smells in your code. This part is not sorted. Do you want to see that picture again? Okay. Okay. This part is not sorted. We know that we're using, I guess Microsoft seemed to be moving to XUnit. The investments in MS Unit, I don't think you're not seeing any new stuff coming out of them. So NUnit or XUnit all the way. In terms of the UI, this is not solidified yet. But if you're doing Windows, you still want to be using coded UI tests. If you're doing web, you'll probably want to be using something like Selenium, or I was calling it Chutzpah, but I've been told it's Chutzpah. So you drop the C and Chutzpah. And that is a cool Visual Studio extension. But basically, we're trying to have more and more testing around the JavaScript investments we've done. Now, the first thing you can do is use TypeScript. The second thing is trying to invest in our JavaScript tests. Just be aware, a number of guys in our company are having great success with Chutzpah, and you can use Jasmine or Mocha or whatever, run, and you just get this nice UI. So you click on here, here's the guy, Chutzpah, grab that guy, run unit tests, and you'll just get past unit tests. All right, so there's not much to that, but that's the area I hope Microsoft start investing in, because we really need some smart unit tests for JavaScript, don't we? All right, so I told you XUnit is a first-class citizen. All right, this year I was recommending MVC, Web API, TypeScript, and Knockout. That was when the 2013 release came out. Well, obviously, things have happened since then, and Angular has killed that one. And we have done all projects in the last 2 years in Angular. Who's an Angular guy? All right, so half the room. Who's a Knockout guy? Okay, all right. You guys have all got to switch. All right, okay. So I would recommend new apps. You're using a SPA front end, most of them, a web API back end. Add your application insights. I'm a native mobile app guy, so I like Xamarin Forms. Continuous deployment using testing in production and deployment slots, and in terms of the testing side, Visual Studio tests, Selenium, and for the JavaScript, Jasmine and Chutzpah. That's kind of the way I'm going down. So before I finish up, I do want to tell you that I have made some posters for you guys, if you want to grab them. And basically, this is a poster I did a few years ago, but I've put a new flavor in it. It's all changed, especially this right-hand side. It's been DevOpsified. I'll be talking about DevOps in the next session, so we'll go through that. Hopefully, you will come up after this and get that. I'll just give you a quick summary. We took a trip down memory lane, what's new in Visual Studio, and we talked about, well, we're going to talk a lot more about these bits in the next session. So last two things, if you want to send me an email, you can send me an email to adamcogan@ssw.com.au. Happy to receive any emails. That's my Twitter. And we've got a whole lot of videos up on tv.ssw.com. And thank you, guys.